Hello and welcome to this week's episode of The Cult of SMMI. I am your host, Scott Mort. A few quick things before we move on to today's story. Number one, as always, everything you hear today falls under a vast umbrella of allegedly. I, Scott Mort, and Strange Pathways, we are not saying that this is what actually happened. These are the allegations of Michael Kovacs. Now, I will say this about Mike. I've known Mike for many, many years. So many years that it kind of frightens me a little bit to think I was ever once 20-something. And that 20-something was 30-some years ago. Mike Kovacs is, to my experience, has been a man of great honesty, great integrity, and great caring. Great caring. I want you to understand something about Mike. Just the kind of person he is. Whenever my mother was fighting cancer, a fight that she ended up losing. Whenever my mother was fighting cancer, she had lost her vision due to a stroke. Mike made it a point to travel very far out of his way to come and visit my mom, a woman he loved. He visited my mom. He brought food for both her and I. He was a glorious man, still is a glorious man. Just a wonderful, wonderful human being in my experience. I have no reason to not believe him. Now, we are going to be taking a kind of sort of break. This is the end of the first part of the interview that I did with Mike, an interview that spanned about 3 hours that I've edited down. So what you're hearing today is the last part of that interview. There is a future interview with Mike, and believe it or not, we have an interview coming up in a few weeks from a former member of the SMMI. So there are going to be a few episodes between my interview with this former member. There's some stuff that I feel is important that I feel needs to get out, because otherwise, if we're not doing what you'll see here next week, the week after, if we're not doing that, this is all just entertainment. I don't want it to be just entertainment. I want this to mean something. And I've said it before and I'll say it again. I think this may be the most important piece of podcasting. And I've been podcasting now for well over 1.5 decades. So, with that in mind, I will see you here next week. No interviews next week. But some important stuff next week, in my mind. With that in mind, on to this week's interview.
The idea is that despair was growing that big because what the mechanism that had been put in place was that my mother, I was kind of an outcast, right? So my mother really, I'd have to get permission to go. I think I'd have to get permission to go see her, or that did wind up happening, but I couldn't just go there necessarily and see her. And my middle sister, God bless her, she became this almost like an UN ambassador. Like, I was now a threat to Teresa because I called her out. I didn't know how badly I called her out, but I called her out, and now she was afraid of me. And so my middle sister became the person who really was would visit my mom like every day or almost every day, and took care of the medications. And there's dozens of stories about about all of that and problems with that. But she was the one that, because she works in pharmaceuticals and is super smart. So she was really careful with those meds and all this other stuff and making, and would, you know, many times it was like, you know, mom's got a fever. We got to get her to the hospital, stuff like that. So it became this thing where I was now the outcast, and my mom wasn't, and my mom's compass mentis, but she's really not swinging for me for the fences. She's just kind of like, oh, whatever. And letting the situation happen. And very, but again, it's a, my mom, all right, I'll cut to the chase so that we can, we'll have a second interview, but I'll cut to the chase. Mm-hmm. So I'm now literally going out of my mind. Okay. I'm angry all the time. I'm depressed all the time and in the abyss all the time. But I did not give up my faith. Cause I figured that's kind of what the dark side wants. Lose the hope, pal. That's what we want. If you do that, we win. So, but I didn't. And at one point, so I began to research a little bit here and there, and then I found on Wikipedia, on the talk page, SMMI, someone said that this group, physically and emotionally and spiritually abuses whoever comes in it. That was my tip off. That was like early on. That was like first or second year. And then the nuns that I knew, the ones in Connecticut, weren't really talking. But stuff was beginning to happen because I think that order, SMMI, what was left was beginning to break down. There's a lot, once Patrizzi left, like she, it, there was, like, this is a longer story, but Patrizzi left the SMMI as a leader, put somebody new in charge. The new woman in charge looked at the books and went, we got to get audited by the Vatican because this stuff is wrong and I don't want to be on the hook. The Vatican comes in. They start nosing through the books and all the blah, 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 and seeing what's wrong, and there's a lot wrong. Patrizzi comes out of retirement and begins this literally take no prisoners approach towards getting whatever she can get from the SMMI to her new team, her new order. And in doing so, and again, this is another story, it's a great story, but so she wound up splintering, and she wound up, Teresa went with her in the splinter, and it was all these things. It's a long story, but it's a great one. But Patrizzi split. So this new order wound up not really having a name. So I can't talk. I don't know who to contact again. Cause let me state something very quickly. As far as I can tell, if this, because this was a cult, and not a true established religious order. Like if it were Catholic order, I can speak for that. I don't know anybody else. But if it were Catholic order and it were run properly, I could have called somebody, spoken to someone in charge, been like, look, you have one of your people is mentally ill, and I'd be cutting it really kindly. We have a problem. I need to talk to you. And they would hopefully meet with me, talk with me, and then be like, okay, well, we'll take this person and we'll talk to them and hopefully take them out of the game or something. They wouldn't, you know what I mean? Like there'd be an access, there'd be a chain of command to go through, right? Like any organization, any business, it's a chain of command. This didn't have one. This was a cult. So they were hidden. So I couldn't contact anybody. So after wandering around in depression and finding small things here and there online, I found out that Patrizzi had been, I won't say excommunicated, but had been told by the Vatican, we heard what you did, we heard about your abuse, if you ever lead another group of people in religious life, you're excommunicated. Okay. I needed to find this letter. Now this is where it gets weirder. Nobody would give me the letter. Patrizzi, it turns out, her family has had hundreds of years in the Vatican with of relationships and family and priests and bishops, cardinals, the whole thing. So she has a lot of leverage in that corporation, right? So people feared her because she was an extortionist, right? She was a con man. So con men's talk to you, they bribe you, and then they use that bribe against you, right? They use the con against you. So this is what she had. So people, there's one, at some point the SMMI had a side order of men, which in the Catholic Church is called brothers. Sisters are women, brothers are men. And I was taught by a really great group of them, of brothers. So again, great, great people. but she had an offshoot of men. I'm telling you, these guys would not talk. Okay. They were so locked down. They would not, I could not contact them. They would give me couple of word answers, small things. One guy that was part of it, he gave me a portion of the Vatican letter. I mean, he knew who I was, right? He mm-hmm. saw my name. I told him who I was. I told him what I was about. I don't think he wasn't involved with it anymore. But he didn't give me the full thing. And I was like, you bastard, I need the full thing. I need the full Vatican letter. And then through a total gift of divine intervention, I got a full copy. I got the full copy of the Vatican. And that was like, God, that was 6 years later. I think 88, 90, it was 2011. That was years later. I mean, I was suffering for years. It was just horrible. So fast forwarding.
Do you still have a copy of the letter?
Here's where the fun. What? Of course. Well, I think I have the physical copy, but I know I've got digital. I can send you a copy of the digital.
I would love that. And with your permission, I'd like to put that on like the Facebook, sure. The Twitter. Excellent.
Oh, please. Oh, sure. Yeah. I think, I mean, I don't see, before you put it on anything, I'll check with some survivors, see what the deal is with them.
Absolutely. They're not mentioned.
But I mean, the Huffington Post took it. So, the Huffington Post, like, they got it. I gave them my copy and they validated it. So it's like, mm-hmm. So once this is the thing was, for any, all those of you who are suffering in despair over a trauma and no one believing you and wondering, with whatever, what will happen? Will anybody believe me? Can I talk to anybody? Or is there anybody else in the world? I think that was the thing. Is there anybody else in this world who will understand what I am going through? That was the most devastating thing that you can live with. It's like nobody understands. Like, and it, that was my problem. I couldn't find anybody to concur. That was the thing. You couldn't find anybody. And you think you're going nuts. And then finally I get this letter and then I'm like, okay. And I'm by the way, I'm posting on this site called FatMass, FatMass. And that was this wonderful little golden thread where I found people posting about it. I'm like, oh, something's up. And small things. No one's hitting super hard. Some people are saying some things, but I'm definitely getting some traction here. Like, there's some stuff. So I start posting under a different name, of course. And I start posting and things are happening. And then finally I get this letter and then now I got documents stating what Patrizia was about. So I'm like, okay, it's time. So I basically, and a couple of Catholic websites were total jerks. They wouldn't let me join them. When they post, they took me down. But this site, because I had a bunch of posts about this that were sidebar abuse, no one was really saying, it wasn't all great. I post this thing stating that Patrizia, the SMMI still exists, but Patrizia herself has started on the order, has kind of been excommunicated sort of, whatever, but the Vatican has stated her abuse and I have the letter about it. Post that. And that's when the floodgates opened. And I'm pretty sure, yeah. Okay, so that was the first thing. And then my memory's a little confused, but the first two people I came in contact with, which led to the third, were life changers. I'm going to say the first woman I came in contact with, the survivor of the contact. And by the way, I had to vet these people. It's not like if someone's going to email me through FatMass, I got it. It's not my real name and not my real email. I got to vet them under a different name to make sure they're not a scammer, a reporter, or something, which happened a lot. It's not like, so I had to have them email me under a different name or read their emails, ask a couple of questions, and vet them. And then I let them know who I was. This was a cult. Now, what separates, and I was listening to the radio one day, it was NPR if you want to be specific, but I was going to the funeral of a student's mom, if you want to know the full detail. And I'm driving, trying to find the cemetery, and this show comes on, and it's a guy talking about cults. And this is like early on in all this, I have no idea. And this guy describes what it's like being in a cult, what a cult is. And I almost swerved into an oil truck because he was saying, it was like, I was losing my mind. He's like saying exactly it. The only thing that separates you not being in a cult and you being in a cult is being at the wrong place at the wrong time. It's nothing. People are not weaker. People, it's like you just happen to be at the wrong place at the wrong time and they get you. That's it. Right? So that's, I don't want to make it think like, these women were weak. These men were weak. No. They just were searching and they wound up getting a wolf, you know, to take care of them instead of a kind hand. That's, I just want to make that clear.
Yeah.
Because I don't like the idea is like, oh, they were weak. No. These are great human beings. These are amazingly beautiful human beings who just, it just happened. You know, it's not their fault. And then they left. So, you know. Who is the one that testified to the Huffington Post? She told stories that really just, you know, made me just broke. They broke me again and again and again. One of them was, you know, how that, you know, the same thing, the torture, the lack of sleep, the whole thing. But the other one was like they were very, it was a cult, so they were very, very good, very good at getting everything you own out of the gate. Meaning, but it was very clever. You're going to donate it. It was under the guise of a religious order. And this sort of makes sense. Sort of. It sort of does. You're joining the order. It's a community. So everything you get goes to the community. Again, a beautiful thing when used properly. But what they would do is they'd get these women in their 20s, maybe early 30s or whatever. And these women maybe, they had their parents' inheritance, their parents' house. So somehow they collected, I think it was, I wish I can remember, I'll know for next time. Teresa would know, there's like five houses. They had four, I'm going to lowball and say three houses or four houses in Rome, area. One was a farm. Okay. They got this from conning these women out of their money and joining. There wouldn't be money for food. So what they would do is they'd sweep up the rice after a wedding. Okay. So that's what they would have to eat sometimes or be told to eat. And those are maggots.
I actually have, in my show notes here, I do have like the fat mass here in little, and I do see that here. Let's see, working sisters so hard. Some had no decent sleep. Given rotten food to eat, extreme fastings, lying to church authority. Yeah. Where is it? There was something about maggots here.
Maggots in the food.
Making us eat food with maggots. No privacy in the bathroom. Yeah.
Yeah. Let me also tell anyone who's listening and you, this is the most amazing thing about this. If you have doubts about what these women are saying, allow me to state the following unequivocally. These women, they would call me, contact me, email me. All of these women contacted me, but did not contact each other. They didn't know where the other one was. Okay? So there's no cross communication. Each one of these women said the same story. Okay? Across the board without knowing the other one even existed. Okay? That was what was very freaky, was you'd get these stories from these women that all locked in, but they didn't talk to each other, right? Because they didn't know. Like, they just wanted the thing about Patrizzi from the Vatican. So that was what was very, like, blew my brains. I was like, oh my God, like, this is all true because they're not talking to each other. They're not living in a condo together. They're all across the country and they're telling me the same stories from different years. So all of this is true. That was what made it like, oh no, this is legit. So there was all of those things that happened. Yeah. So these women start finding me. And they start finding it, and I'm like, and I'm like, okay. And I'm trying to set them up with each other so they can find each other and heal. Like, you're not alone. You're not alone. You survive. And then everything kind of, and then NPR. I'll try to tie this up really quick. Then NPR, I started sending out leads like church abuse. I have proof. And I think it's about 90 emails between myself and NPR that were like, they're interested back and forth. And then they drop it. And I was so depressed. At one point I was like, okay, fine. I did my best. My mom is still screwed. I'm still screwed. These women are screwed, but I know I gave everything I could. I put it out there. It's still out there. I helped some women. Maybe something will happen, but I don't know. Then literally when I kind of let go, I know I hate when people say like, the moment that I let go is the moment it happened. Okay. I didn't totally let go. I'm sure there's like 2 or 3% still there.
Yeah. Yeah.
But when I was at my point of it, like the Huffington Post found me on FatMass. And this woman emailed me, Jessica Blank. We emailed back and forth. And then at another time, we'll get to that thing. But Jessica Blank believed me. And she ran with that story. And that's what you can find on the Huffington Post site about it. They edited it way down for reasons I'll get to later. But this whole thing that I've spoken about in one way or another was verified by a reputable newspaper with a lot of lawyers and a lot of reporters and a lot of money to help them research. So all I can say, so it went out, the story got blocked because of COVID. This was coming Easter of 2020. It came out at the end of 2020, the day that Huffington Post was sold. They just dumped the story. So there was many, many, many hours of interviews and a lot of stuff that never got put on Huffington Post. But the Huffington Post story is legit. It's just very tame. Marie Therese, she was the one that would go, appeared on camera for the interviews. The other woman didn't. My friend who's a rape victim didn't want to go, you know, have her face shown. But she did actually in the 11th hour say, look, I'll tell you my story, but I don't need to show my face. So that made the story. Like when the reporter heard that, it was like the gates of heaven opened and everything ran through it. So the story that I've said, and will hopefully give you more details again, is legit. It's not from whole cloth. The Huffington Post picked it up. And, you know, the worst thing is to live in a place where no one will believe you. And the idea of being in a place without hope is the worst. And I will say, I know that your podcast deals with paranormal stuff. For what it's worth, I'm just going to say Scott, you and I are musicians, so we've been around.
Yeah.
We've been around the block.
I've seen some odd stuff, man. I've seen some odd stuff that was, and not even paranormal. It's just, I didn't odd expect stuff. That to happen in that way. Yeah.
Right. We've seen odd stuff. We've met odd people. We've seen stuff that makes us go, maybe humanity really shouldn't have evolved. We've seen strangeness, and we've been around the worst side, also the best side, but the worst side. Yeah. And we know. So when I say this as a musician, as a working musician, as you are, and you know, what I was around was evil, and it was something that is not like, you know, not that I disbelieve in The Exorcist, I don't, but I'm saying it wasn't like that. It was more like The Devil's Advocate, where it's this amazingly beautiful con job. That's probably the best movie I can describe it as, you know, with Al Pacino as the devil, because it's not like this horn kind of thing. It's that may be part of it, but that's not where I was at. Even Alice Cooper says the devil's not, you know, the devil's the guy in the best suit in the room who can sell you that contract. And that's what I was dealing with, because it didn't psychoanalytically in the realms of physics, in terms of timing, this stuff didn't add up. It was something other. And that's what that one sister Kay told me, like right out of the box, like the first month, like March something, 4th, 5th.
I think
it was March 4th of 2011. She said, you're going to have to, you will learn to respect it. And I went, it took me a long time, but I didn't fear it because I thought I could take it on. And I'll get to this in another interview. But the idea is this was evil. This was not bad. This was not, oh, geez, this was something other.
Yeah, there's, okay. there is something strange in true evil. And I'll give you an example here. There is, I used to do a true crime podcast. It was, and I had to get away from it because just every week talking about the most horrible things one human can do to another, right?
Yeah.
It was one of the episodes. It kind of hit me was about this family of serial killers called the Bloody Benders from back in the 1800s. And it's odd. It actually ties into Little House on the Prairie. And
oh my God. You.
Yeah. Yeah. Apparently Pa Ingalls was one of the people who took down this family. If cool. Legends are to be believed, right?
Okay.
But at one point, like they're burying people under the house and they've thrown a couple of their victims into their drinking well. Why did they not die?
Yes. Yeah.
Right. And I are drinking corpse water. we would be dead. But there was something mm-hmm. not of this earth, not of realm, keeping them alive. And it's a very easy thing to gloss over, going like, well, oh, that's disgusting. No. Let's really look into this. These guys were drinking fetid water soaking in decomposing corpses that they put there. And they were fine? That doesn't happen to humans.
No, there's something, that's why it's hard to tell people about this, because unless you've seen it, like when I literally tell you the entire physics of my sister changed right from the moment when she was going towards that doctor, and then the moment she understood, she had to kind of totally do a 180 into her entire, I can't describe it. It just totally changed. It was the weirdest thing ever. The other women concurred with me about this. This is the other thing. Like, and the fact is that, my wife, God love her, she's like Yoda on steroids. Like, she can handle my sister, Teresa. Like, no, mm-hmm. like, you know, she can do it because she's so centered. I'm not. But the idea is also, there's this one thing that happens is that, what happened to me, I'll make it maybe more in another interview, I'll tell you more, but if Teresa is able, if you engage with her, she gets you and you get angry, that's her hook. And then what happens is she feeds off your energy, and then you get, for me, this is what happened to me, is like something in the upper left corner of the room would, this dark, strange, you can kind of see it, but you kind of know it's there. It's kind of weird. It would kind of come in and just move to center, and then you would wind up turning into this insane, angry human being, and she would be totally centered, and you would be lost your mind. I was scared for myself. I'll go into more detail later, but it happened twice. The second time I caught myself, and I go, hey, Mike, this is not you. Something is, I don't know who this is, but you gotta center yourself, because this is not you. So I told this to Therese and to the other survivors, and they were both like, oh yeah, that upper left corner? Yeah. She does that. That's her. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh my God. So, but the other side of the coin is, it's easy to fetishize that thing and to cower in fear. And what I carried with me from what that one woman said, to respect it, that doesn't mean to worship it. That means to be like, I understand that you are this thing. I will not engage because I'm not strong enough. And I'll get to stories about that later. I'm not strong enough myself to engage with this and overcome it. God is, I'm not. But you got to understand that thing. So these women were so wonderful. That's why finding survivors really helped out. But I think anybody who's been through a cult, anybody who feels alone, anybody who feels like, I mean, I will feel somewhat guilty in some way that, you know, that I was a part of this. I wasn't, but I was. I was a kid. I was a guy in his late teens and 20s trying to be a musician and try to save up money to go to Minneapolis to music school. And I wound up being in the middle of this, but I didn't know, you know. And then when I did find out, no one believed me. But I ask anybody who's had bad experiences that legitimately happened that I believe your truth is your truth. And that is the most sacred thing you have. And find help, find someone to talk to. If they don't work, find somebody else. It's like an auto mechanic. Oh, we can't fix it. Find somebody. It's like a doctor. Oh, we don't know what this is. Find someone who will fix your foot. If we don't know what to do with your foot, find someone who can work with your foot. Find someone who can work with you psychologically and spiritually, whatever, to center you, because your truth is your truth. If you live through something this dark, you're not alone. You know, that's, I think, I mean, I'm just a guy, but I can just say, like, just hold on, because you're not crazy and you're not alone.
Thank you for joining us here on the Cult of SMMI. If you go over to our Facebook page, to the Twitter, to Instagram, we're going to have a few pieces of literature, a snippet of the letter that Mike Kovacs was talking about during this episode, a flyer that the SMMI put up. And also, you will find a link to an article about the allegations of abuse within the SMMI. A lot of people have been kind of going like, oh, is this real? Is this fake? No, this is very real. And I know a lot of you are not going to read this article because, quite frankly, you're driving, you're cleaning, and it will slip your mind. For those of you that plan to read the article, and I strongly, strongly encourage you to do so, it is a HuffPost article. For those of you that do plan, please go over, leave those comments like that. For those of you that right now cannot or don't want to, please let me read it for you. From the Huffington Post, December 28th, 2020. Allegations of abuse within the convent walls. Four former nuns shared their story of their time in the Sisters Minor of Mary Immaculate Religious Order by Jessica Blank. Religious orders are supposed to provide spiritual guidance to those who join, but some of the women who entered Sisters Minor of Mary Immaculate, SMMI, say they faced physical and emotional abuse. Patricia Budd, one of the former nuns of SMMI, first entered in 1995 in hopes of connecting with her Catholicism. It was at her first retreat where she met the order's U.S. delegate, Sister Teresa Kovacs. It was a lot of hugs. There was a lot of encouragement, Budd told the Huff Post. They would listen to you and you felt really important and you felt like you were valued. But soon after she joined, Bud and the other nuns realized things were not as they seemed. I witnessed other girls just being yelled at on a constant basis by Teresa Kovacs, said Rose, who joined the SMMI in 1995. Three interviewees asked to only be identified by their first names. According to Rose, a sister named Georgiana often got the brunt of Kovacs' anger. It would be a torrent of the nastiest stuff you could ever say to a human being. She would say to me, said Georgiana. It was meant to keep people in line. Teresa Kovacs did not respond to multiple requests for comment. The nuns faced strict rules. They weren't allowed to speak to each other. They weren't allowed to go for walks outside the convent doors. We were not allowed to walk outside ever by ourselves, said Barbara, who joined the SMMI in 1996. I was not allowed to walk around the block. According to Bud, they even had their food restricted. Basically, your food is pretty much less and less, she said. And so, that's pretty much like what a cult is. And break you down. That's the whole thing. Always to break you down. When Georgiana was recovering from a near-death experience with cancer, she was moved to a convent in Stamford, Connecticut to recover, where she said Kovacs would enter her room at night and sit with her. Barbara, who often heard Kovacs enter Georgiana's room, was concerned. I just wondered, why would you be coming up there late at night like that, she said. Rose, whose room was nearby, also heard Kovacs yelling at Georgiana during these late night visits. It was at this point that Rose knew she needed to leave. However, upon entering the order, she was asked to hand over all of her material possessions and forms of identification, without money and an ID, leaving SMMI became more like escaping. After only 3 years in the order, she left one day when Kovacs was away in Italy. We were able to arrange for us just to leave in the middle of the day without our habits and with borrowed clothes, said Rose. We must have looked like we just walked out of a hospital bed, out of a coma. Each of the four women left the order separately over the course of many years. Barbara left after 2 years in the order. Patricia Budd left after 7 years. Georgiana left after 15 years. Despite their experiences in SMMI, the women all still feel ties to their Catholic faith. While Rose is a devout Catholic, she acknowledges the problems that exist within the church. The Catholic Church does have many problems, and many other places have problems. Many companies have problems in the corporate world that ever since I got out, I've seen, she said. But she encourages others to separate their faith from those institutions. It can affect your spirituality that way if you don't separate the two. They're separate. Now these women are speaking out in hopes of raising awareness for others who may find themselves in abusive environments. I would like to also make others aware so that if they are suffering the same kind of things, that they don't feel bad about themselves and that they come forward because it's not their fault. Because people make bad choices doesn't mean we have to hide and suffer from it. I am not going to let it own me anymore, Georgiana said.